Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Double the talent in Ryan's house.
Boom.
Actually.
Yeah, we didn't do anything. We're the talent.
I mean, in all fairness, I would venture to say that more people know the Ray's name than any of ours.
Depends on where you go.
As weird as that is. Well, no, I mean, it's just true life. More people watch like Star City coverage and stuff than listen to this, and you show up on Star City coverage and all these other coverage outlets. Like, people, whether they know who you are or not, they still know your name more than they know ours.
I did have my big celebrity moment in North Carolina, where like four people were like, oh my god, are you Raymond? I'm like, yes. They're like, I seen you on Star City. I'm like, cool, bro.
Star City? Playing on camera or some shit?
Yeah, when I top four at Cincinnati.
How many of those have you top eight?
Just one. I have infinite top 16s though. It's so hard to top eight those things because there are 11 rounds. You have to you get varianced out one time, and then you have a bad matchup somewhere, and you just lose, and you're just top 16 forever.
I didn't think it was that hard. I'm 1-for-1.
Oh! Well,
To be fair, I play him in the Midwest, though.
Yeah, not Oklahoma, where you have to play against a fucking pig round one.
Oh!
You had to play, or there'd be buys.
Mine was in Kansas City.
Oh, that's better.
They roast pigs over there.
It was Kansas City. It was Legacy. Kansas City Legacy, and it was seven rounds.
I know two things. Maverick is poorly positioned in this format, and evolution is a lie.
Goddamn, you're one of them Obamakins.
Obamakins.
That's not a thing.
Obamanomics.
Obamanomics. Excellent.
Lord have mercy.
So, Obamanomics, that means we gotta start the episode. This is Brainstorm Brewery, episode number 58. Or 68.
58?
Right? 67?
68.
It is literally our only job to know that.
No, it's not.
Ryan, your job, since you claim you're the talent, your job is to remember what episode number it is and say it at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, the show notes that I linked to you guys.
I can't remember what day of the week it is half the time.
Yeah, you linked the show notes and then we opened up a new discussion and it's gone. So.
Well, maybe you should open up the link, dumbass, because it says show notes, episode 68.
I haven't even opened the show notes. Has anyone else done that?
Nobody has the link, Corbin. It went away.
That makes you all really stupid.
No, it makes you worthless because you failed to get a show notes.
Yeah, because you can't click.
Anyway, welcome to Brainstorm Brewery.
We all hate each other and we're not friends outside the cast.
We got an intruder alert. Well, not really an intruder. He's actually one of the team. So, can we introduce you as an official BrainstormBrewery.com writer?
You can. Coming soon. I haven't wrote my first article yet, but it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, we know, Ray. We know you haven't written your first article.
I got busy. I'm sorry.
Ray's on our cast.
So who are you, Ray? Say your name and spell it out so everyone doesn't know the wrong Ray.
It is Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D, hyphen, Future Pro, / Ray Future Pro on Moto, or MTGO, / Perez Jr., a.k.a. the one and only.
Ooh, that's a mouthful for everyone out there.
That was the most athlete possible. Everyone's taking notes trying to spell that out, and they're like, hyphen?
Or Ray Future Pro on Moto.
Just one hyphen?
One hyphen. Only one. Underscore / @ #
So your first name is Ray hyphen. Last name is hyphen the future pro, the one and only Perez Jr.
Hyphen Perez Jr. Right.
Right.
Have fun editing this article, whoever gets that
job. So that's not even my real name. Okay.
So this news is we're going to get some articles on brainstormbrewery.com, which is our website. We're still going to be on Gathering Magic. That's nothing that's going to change on that. But we just want to have some people that we respect and, you know, put out some articles there. And we're going to have probably some of our own little finance articles we're going to put out there. So check that out. We had Jeff Hoogan. How you say his name?
Hoogland.
Sorry.
So yeah, it's Jeff. Hoogly Boogly himself.
I'm going to reintroduce that so I don't sound bad.
No, it's fine because you can't pronounce anything, so it's actually an honor.
So, Jeff.
That you're missed out on him.
So talk about the articles, Jason, because you're going to be our editor. So.
Oh, no, there's no way I don't want that job. That's so bad.
Jason's the content manager. How about that?
That sounds good. That sounds like I directly manage the editor. That sounds like I delegate. Okay, I'll be the content manager.
I'll be the editor. Oh, God.
It's not the editor.
No.
Hey, look, now you can't ever say that I didn't offer my talents.
I'm fairly illiterate, Ryan.
You don't have talent there. You can't offer what you don't have.
He doesn't have talent. He is talent.
All the time. You claim to know something about, like, magic finance on this cast every week.
Man, I
trade or anything. You like, run the storefront. We all do.
I've heard the last guy.
I know magic
finance. Guys are interrupting each other. Speak one at a time.
Raise I know magic answers. Finance, and I know country music. Those don't great. Things
matter. I'm going to register for not your website. Please don't tell those two things to the podcast listeners.
That popping sound is people turning the podcast off.
Yeah, you guys have really went down the wrong path. So basically what Jason is saying is he really doesn't have the chops to be an editor. And Corbin's time is done elsewhere because he's a nerdball guy. So we're looking for someone that can probably help us in this department. So if any of our listeners have even the slightest interest in this, please drop us a line and we might be able to talk to you further about this. We know that you guys respond because you guys responded to our polls. We had the beer polls and now we're at like 200 votes.
No, it was at least closer to 150, but it's still pretty amazing considering we get like zero comments. We didn't know anybody listened to the podcast until we got a bunch of responses to the poll. So thank you for voting. We never said when it was closing, but it looks like Black IPA is in the lead and ooh. I don't know if it can be caught.
It's caught now. You got IPA and Black IPA both at 35, and Stout is at 33. So,
well, I haven't voted for the Hefeweizen from 30 different computers yet. So,
we'll spell it Hefeweizen with a V, because that's how you pronounce Hefeweizen.
It would be with a V. And I love me some Hefeweizen.
Boy, howdy! Love me some Hefeweizen.
Well, it's good to see that the good beers are on top. That's really, really.
Yeah, everyone was like, I'm glad Pilsner's on the bottom. I'm like, I'm glad too, because I put Pilsner in there as a joke.
So what's a Black IPA? I've never had that.
It's like a stout and an IPA mixed, if I'm correct. Is that right, Jason?
That's kind of a good way to put it.
Detroit
was actually on the IPA last week and he talked all about it. So if you're lost, why don't you go ahead and listen to last week's episode where we went a little bit into a little bit of some beer finance, talking about some beers you might want to pick up and be able to, you know, age and trade on the secondary market, kind of like sitting on a box of sealed product. I really like that concept. As a beer drinker that accidentally aged a few bottles in my fridge by neglecting them.
So I've got some Bud Light and some Corona that's been in my fridge for a little while. How much longer do I need to leave it until it's good?
Hundreds of years. No one's ever actually successfully aged a Budweiser to drinkability.
Well, this one has lime in it.
Ooh, you know what? You're onto something there, Corbin.
You say it has lime?
Yeah, lime. But light with lime.
Oh, my God. And it's not a Corona?
Lime isn't the lime I'm going to dump in Corbin's shallow grave to keep him from stinking.
It's for the fish crabs. You got to have lime on the fish crabs, you know, because you got water beer.
There you go, get some ceviche going.
We actually usually just call the beer piss water because, like, in Oklahoma, everything's like 3.2. So, you know, it's not even strong beer.
Yeah, it's a great place you vehemently denied the desire to leave earlier tonight when we talked about it.
I'm not going anywhere. Love this state.
So do we want to talk about magic cards at all? Or?
Yeah.
No.
We didn't last week. Why start now?
Let's tell everyone. You got 2 weeks to finish voting on the beer, and then we're going to announce it. Then we're gonna move into
so long.
All right, let's talk about some Theros then.
Some Theros, man. It looks like the spoilers. They figured out how to do these spoilers a little bit better because this week's been juicy, and I've been seeing probably some of the cards that I will be playing in standard, and this is the splashy.
Yeah, they seem to make some good stuff.
Future Pro, what do you like?
Oh, there's a lot. There is actually a lot. It's going to be really difficult for me. I thought it was going to be very simple and that I would just try and gravitate towards blue-white. And there's a lot of good aggression in the set. There's a lot of good control. Blue-white really didn't get too big of a swing in the set, so it's pretty much just working off what we had from last block. And there's a lot. I'm very excited.
Let's talk utility. What kind of removal and counter spells did blue-white get that you're happy about?
That new card, it's the new cancel variant where you get to scry. I forgot the name of it.
It's called Dissolve. It costs the same as cancel, and the only thing different is you scry one. It seems very powerful.
Only thing different? That's a big thing different.
Yeah. I like that. That card's very good. The gods, the white god, Helioid, I don't know how, is that how you say his name?
Helioid?
Let's ask Marcel for amusement.
let's do that.
It's probably Heliod, right? Isn't that how?
Heliod, probably.
Heliod?
Lion, like Heliond?
No. I think it's Heliod.
Heliod is insane. I do love Heliod.
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 Yeah, it should rhyme with Iliad. It's Heliod. For sure.
This mono, Heliod. A mono white deck may just, there has to be ways to target them that are like, really good, but
that's what I haven't been able to break. Like, I'm pretty much, or for all intents and purposes, I was gonna work with a couple guys for the Pro Tour, but I wasn't able to get my flight booked in time to the dates that they want it, so I'm pretty much doing it solo, and it's gonna be kind of sweet, actually, because I don't know. I'm pretty confident in the constructed part, but the limited part is where I'm gonna have to have some people named, I don't know, Ryan Bouchard and some other guys.
We got three cases on the way.
On that, I can actually freely talk about everything for myself because I don't have anyone to spoil anything.
Okay, Ray, let me bounce some cards off you. Sure. As a blue player, how do you feel about Omen Speaker?
Omen Speaker, the new Augur Bolas?
Yes, Omen Speaker is a 1/3 human wizard. When it enters the battlefield, scry 2.
I think he's sweet. I think that it's definitely something you want it in control, just be able to stall the ground. 1/3 was relevant. I haven't looked too much at it yet because it's not fully spoiled and I don't want to like have a good idea and then have some new cards come out and just like totally freak me out. But, based on past information, 1/3 were very relevant. I'm not sure how good Scry is versus like replacing itself. That's the one part that I'm having difficulty with, especially because you don't have a blink effect like Restoration Angel anymore. But as far as
stuffing 2/2 Satyr tokens.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of 2 power 1 mana guys that we seem to be seeing across the colors. So I imagine a 1/3 is going to be relevant.
Okay, Ray. Here's another one. Gainsay. Gainsay is a reprint.
That's twice.
One in a blue, instant counter blue spell.
Yep. I actually have original Gainsays in my house still from back in the day. I love Gainsay. That card's very relevant. It's always been relevant. I don't think it's going to be main deckable, obviously, because there's everything else but control, unless control dominates, which I don't think Wizard of the Coast will let happen. But it's definitely going to be a role player in on the sideboards for sure. Always has, always will.
What all right. Swan Song.
Swan Song. Absolutely. That was the next one I was going to go to.
Yeah.
Swan Song costs 1 blue, instant, counter target enchantment, instant or sorcery. Its controller puts a 2/2 blue bird token with flying out of the battlefield.
Words.
It's a null?
No. This does not get artifacts.
Enchantment, instant, or sorcery. And they get
a whoops. Yeah. I totally misevaluated this card. 100%. I didn't know it said instant, sorcery, or enchantment. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I like it.
They get a 2/2 flyer.
Yeah, but against a control deck. I mean, it could be bad. It could be good, though. I mean.
They got a 3/3 with Beast Within.
Shoot the flyer.
Yeah, if you just got it with board wipe, you could just take down something, a hard counter for 1, you know, is fucking, and you just wipe the board and you really don't care about the 2/2.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems Legacy and Vintage playable also.
Oh yeah.
Like, I think you want foils of this if you can get them cheap, but you probably can't because everyone else has got the same idea.
This card versus Show and Tell.
Yeah, they can't actually win versus this card.
Is this gonna be worse than Dispel Ray, or is it gonna be better than Dispel?
No, because it hits their, it's Enjambit. Another way to hit the sneak attack.
No, he's talking about in standard. Dispel's not a legacy card. No. But I think it's I think it depends on what you're looking for. In a control deck, I don't think it would be, because usually a byproduct that's a 2-2 isn't too threatening. But, for instance, like maybe an aggressive deck, maybe they would rather have it just cause they don't give another blocker on the other side. But the fact that it can hit the gods are pretty relevant.
Right.
That's one thing that I'm not sure how powerful, like obviously all the gods are inherently powerful, but I'm not sure how much of a impact they're gonna have.
Now, Art Halivan on Twitter today made it clear to everybody that even though you're casting the god as an enchantment, you're kind of not, because even though it doesn't check the devotion, you can't negate a god.
Really?
Yes. Because it says non-creature spell?
Because it says non-creature. So it still has a creature type when you cast it.
Just remove soul or dismiss soul or whatever it is now.
Scatter does work, negate does not.
I like that.
So, yeah, because Essence Scatter doesn't say counter target non-creature.
Right.
If it did, that would be clunky, but you couldn't Essence Scatter in that weird circumstance where it said non-creature.
So Ray, I mean, I think, you know, it's safe to say that at least looking at RTR block, Blue-White Control is the most powerful deck. You know, they were like 20 Jaces or whatever in the top 8 of the Pro Tour. Have you seen anything from Theros that changes that?
Well, to be clear, Blue-White X, because Esper, I'm pretty sure, is the top deck, and Grixis was picking up steam after the Pro Tour on Modo. But Blue-White X, the god, the Helioid god that I was talking about, I think he's really sweet for control, because, like, in any format that Mobilization or Sacred Mesa was legal in Standard, those cards are driving forces, because just being able to have a recurrable source of creatures is very powerful. And I like Elsbeth a lot. I was listening to a different podcast earlier this week, and they were mentioning Elsbeth and how they don't really like it. But I think Elsbeth is sweet.
I did,
because
too.
Because plus one, you get three creatures, where with Terrell, you had to negative, I think it was two, to get creatures.
Yeah.
So being able to build your loyalty and produce a squad to block everything else is, I think, pretty sweet. That's I watched BBD play one of those playtesting videos, and he had, or CVM had, Elsbeth and the White God and his Blue-White Control deck, and they seemed pretty sweet on that video. So that got me all geeked up and excited to playtest them.
Is 6 mana not going to be too much then?
I don't think so, not for a Planeswalker. It never was before. I guess the big argument is that versus Aetherling, and I don't think it's really an argument, because they do very different things. So
Aetherling's your finisher. Elsbeth just creates the Elsbeth subgame, where if they can't immediately deal with Elsbeth, they're probably not killing it, just because it makes so many blockers.
Plus, it's very viable for a theme for tokens, too. Like, what if you have Elsbeth and the Red God?
Oh,
deal 6 damage? That's insane.
Now, if we're dealing with Elsbeth without contending with all those blockers, Black actually gets a very interesting tool in the form of Hero's Downfall.
Yeah.
Which is a colorless and 2 black for an instant. Destroy target creature or planeswalker. So what they've done is they've made it a monocolor instant speed, slightly more expensive Dreadbore.
Or they made murder into a better murder.
Right.
Yeah. And this is a rare, so yeah.
What's this do for Dreadbore, do you guys think? I think this is definitely going to affect Dreadbore's cost, because because now.
I think in the decks Dreadbore is in, you don't want to pay 3 mana. You want to pay 2.
Like Jund, for instance, like a Jund-ish deck that would play Dreadbore now can probably play Hero's Downfall fine.
I think it's going to stunt what Dreadbore could have done, but I still think Dreadbore is going to increase in price from where it's at right now, because it's still a solid card. And
maybe a little.
I think Dreadbore has got a role in being kind of less mana in a more aggressive deck. Dreadbore is still going to have a home, whereas this seems like maybe a more mid-rangey type deck will want to play it. So I think Dreadbore will still have utility, but I don't think it'll be as broadly used.
Future Pro.
Yep.
Weigh in.
Oh, Dreadbore didn't have too big of an impact in block, so if you're like, that's where all my information is coming from right now before I mix it with everything else, is just like reflecting on how everything would work with block first. And Dreadbore wasn't a huge player in block. Now, if this card was in block, then obviously that would just be a way better thing. And Murder saw play, and Dismember saw play. Obviously, Dismember was a little bit better because you can play it in any deck. But I think this card is going to be seeing play in anywhere from aggressive decks to awesome control decks and the mid-range decks. Being an instant is a huge thing, too.
Another thing that they didn't have in block was Tormented Hero, which is a one black mana 2/1. When it enters the battlefield tapped, kind of like, what was that zombie? The 2/2. Daggerf Ghoul. Yeah, it's got a heroic ability. Whenever you cast a spell that targets Tormented Hero, each opponent loses a life. You gain life equal to the life lost that way. So it's sort of like a half-assed Blood Artist meets a half-assed Diagraph Ghoul. I kind of like it. I think if you put something like, no, don't talk because we can edit out the silence when I'm thinking. What is it? Madcap Skills.
Why
could you guys supply Madcap Skills when I said as a clue?
Because I wasn't thinking about Madcap Skills.
Yeah, Madcap Skills, something like that. Like, that'd be a good way to target Tormented Hero.
Oh, and then you get a whole extra point of damage. That's pretty genius, Jason. Yeah, that's
the problem I have with this card is, like, I liked it a lot when I first saw it, and I realized, like, how many times are you going to target this over something else in play?
Right, especially with other heroic creatures.
Yeah.
It's well, like, it doesn't matter if that ability never goes off, though, because he's like,
he's still a 2/1 for 1, which is all the, like, suicide blanket.
Yeah, if you're playing aggressive decks, like, you gotta really think how many spells are gonna be in your decks, and how many of those spells are gonna be targeting your own creatures, and, like, heroic, I honestly don't think is standard playable, except for this new card that we just saw, which was the Agent of Fates, is probably the first standard playable heroic card. I think
Tormented Hero is playable because it's 2 power for 1 mana.
But not Ray, what do you think? Heroic is playable for the, yeah, as...
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it's a playable.
It's a Rakdos Cackler that you can occasionally trigger, but, like, incidentally, you're not building around it.
Right. No, I'm curious, Ray, because, like, I'm pretty high on Exiva, Rakdos Blood Witch, the 4-drop. You know, just in Black Red also has Hellhole Flare. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, I don't know that you're going to be able to go 3 colors in the aggro decks with the mana we have. So that made me think, okay, well, people are probably just going to play Gruul instead of Rakdos because they have Goreclan Rampager. I mean, this kind of maybe tilted it the other way. What do you think the aggro decks are going to shake out? Do you think you Jund colors are reasonable? Or do you think you pretty much have to commit to either, like, you know, Black-Red or Red-White or Green-Red?
I think in the beginning you're going to want to stick 2 colors until mana fixing gets a little bit better. Because the dual lands help some, but they're tap dual lands. So, like, best case scenario is you have all your colors on turn 2, but you only have 1 land available to you.
Are you referring to the temple cycle?
Yes, we haven't talked about these cards.
So the dual lands Ray was referring to is a cycle of 5 lands in this set. I don't think there will be 5 in the next set. But
There will be.
It will be 5 in the next set, we know that.
They did the 5 lands that were in Gatecrash this time.
Right.
And then they're gonna do the Return of Ravnica lands in the next one.
So, Temple of Abandon, Deceit, Mystery, Silence, and Triumph. So we have red, green, blue, black, blue, green, white, black, and red, white. They all come into play tapped, and when they come into play, you scry 1.
Yeah, so I mean, they slow down, like, they're really good, probably good for control decks, and these aggro decks, like, yeah, they maybe help you get 3 colors, but, like, you know, having a 3rd color probably isn't worth it if you can't play a 2-drop on turn 2. So, I mean, what do you think is going to shake out as the best of kind of the 3 aggressive options?
Ooh, I think that red-green definitely has a big push for it just because you get to play essentially everything that was good in black. And you actually get good cards from M14 as well, like Young Power Mancer. Like, take, for instance, the mono-red deck that I've been just crushing everyone on Moto with. It loses Stromkirk Noble. Searing Spear. And...
No, it doesn't.
No.
Searing Spear actually got a functional reprint in the form of Lightning Strike.
Right, well, technically it loses it, but you do get Lightning Strike. So Noble hits hard just because Noble's amazing against so many decks right now. Whether that's going to be true when Theros comes out, that's probably debatable, but it's a good 1-drop. But so pretty much you lose a total of like 8 to 12 cards between main deck and sideboard, and that's a mono red deck. And with our red-green, you get the option of running the Burning Tree Emissaries, Goreclan, you get, Xur'Tai Druid, you get, Rampagers, you can still run Reckoners, cause like, you could even do the whole, splash the green-white guild gate, or not guild gate, temple land, just to be able to cast Reckoner again, just like they did before. Right. But, I think that's gonna be one of the top ones. Green-white is looking pretty powerful as well, cause green-white was debatable the best aggro deck in, RTR block, and you get a lot more aggressive cost creatures from this set, as well as you get Imposing Sovereign and a couple other cards from M14. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a toss-up between red-green and or green-white for the best aggro deck in the beginning of the format.
I like green-white. So one thing before we move on. Marcel, was it you who was saying, like, you don't think Heroic's playable in Standard?
Yeah, I don't think playing around Heroic as an ability to use is going to be much playable in Standard. I don't think there's any cards that really show that. Maybe the Boros one is kind of, if you could build around that with if you have a token deck, but I do like that.
What about Fabled Hero? I mean, just the guy's 2/2 double striker for 3. You target him once and he's insane.
Yeah, like, you're thinking about building a deck around Heroic. You're thinking about targeting him once, which, I mean, you're utilizing Heroic at that point, but I don't think like when I was thinking about, you know, you're utilizing a Heroic deck, like you're going to abuse Heroic.
Yep.
Use it to
I agree. I don't think that's going to be a thing, but I think there will be a number of Heroic cards that are playable because you're running 12 things in your deck that can target your own guys.
Like, yeah, you're running fewer dudes then. Is that enough dudes?
And like God's will or God's willing.
You're playing the Heroic guys because they're good on their own. And the Heroic is marginal upside if you get it. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's like a lot of mechanics.
Yeah, but it's like begging for an engine. It's like a built-in combo potential. If you could just find something that's really good, like it speaks to the Johnny and me, the Heroic as an ability. But I recognize that it is hard for
it. It will dilute your deck too much.
Yeah, like
the one that's begging to be broken is the one that draws you a card when you target
it. Yeah, that's my favorite.
I like the Angel Agent of Fates. We just talk about this. It's the one colorless, 2 black for a 3/2 creature human assassin with Death Touch and Heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets Agent of Fates, each opponent sacrifices a creature. So I think that, you know, that has a lot of potential too, and I really think that's playable. But
you know what I'd like if you still had Saving Grasp to target it with?
Yeah, that or any rebound spell.
Yeah.
Oh, rebound, yeah.
So, before we get too far away from it, I just wanted to point out that, I think some decks were actually cutting, Stromkirk Noble and replacing him with either Legion Loyalist or, Firefist Striker, I think is the guy, like the 2/1 for 2 that, like, made a creature not block when you got Battalion. So I think a lot of people were actually going away from Stromkirk Noble a little bit, so I don't think he's gonna be missed all that much. Like, people have already, like, preemptively replaced him.
Like, yeah. The reason why, for me at least, is a lot of my testing right now is just moto-based, and there are tons of humans, whether it be a Doom Traveler, Cartel Aristocrat, Gather Tokens. Like, Red, Black, White Aristocrats is huge right now, and it might be, like, poised to be one of the best decks before rotation. But the thing is... Next week. Yeah, I mean, well, for moto, we still got, like, another month. So this is relevant for anyone that plays Moto out there and is looking to grind some tickets. I won over 150 with this mono red deck in like the last 2 weeks.
Huh.
So yeah, I mean the first deck I'm going to try out. And I guess it's just to see if I think the spec is, I mean, it sounds like kind of you think that red, green or green, white may be better. I want to try just the red, black, aggro deck with all the one drops. Cause like, and then you go Hellhole Flare, Exiva and Erebos on 4 mana. Because like, in an aggro deck, the ability to, pay 2 life and mana to draw cards is a pretty good way to like, top out and keep it coming. So, like, that's the first thing I want to try, because if you find a really good, and you can, you know, make that aggro deck pretty consistent in the first couple weeks, I think you could get pretty far, with just a focused streamlined deck like that, while everyone else is trying to, you know, play the clunkier, mid-range or control decks and try to make cool cards work. You can just bash people's faces. And...
Right. My only issue with that is, like, how do you think those creatures match up against green and white? Because having played multiple block dailies just in, like, the last few days, mono red is very hard to play in block just because they go turn 2, voice, or call the conclave, turn 3, smiter, turn 4, Tristani, and then it just gets out of hand. You can't catch them.
Well, you can't beat Tristani. I don't think you beat Tristani unless I have a removal spell just
right,
on the spot.
Right, like even just bigger creatures with bigger toughness. Like, how do you beat like an X3 or an X4? That's like a huge wall. That's hard to do.
How do you beat Lost Spider?
You've got Hero's Downfall and you have Thunder Strike or whatever. You have Searing Spear.
They've got Rootbound defenses, so you're almost doing them a favor at that point.
Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily work like that. They tap out on turn three to play an X3 and you kill it in bash or whatever. I mean, I think Loxodon Smiter is your biggest issue.
Right. Smiter or Gyre Sage, however you pronounce him, he gets out of control pretty quick in that deck as well.
Yeah.
Ratchet Bomb.
I mean, Ratchet Bomb is probably going to get packed whether we like it or not.
Yeah. I mean, what really excites me, just the potential, I guess, in red-black is how strong Exiva is at the top end of your curve and how powerful Hellhole Flayer is. I mean,
is it Flayer or Flailer?
Flailer.
I think it's Flailer because, like, if you're flaying a hole, like, that imagery is just not great.
Yeah, it's Flailer. Every time I had a PTQ, I would put my hands in the air and I'd yell, Flailer. So it's definitely Flailer.
Hellhole Flailer. Yeah,
I'm sure people love losing to you, Ray.
It's very demoralizing. I'll give them that.
Yeah, I lost to a cartoon character.
It might have been the handy.
It's definitely fun times playing people in tournaments.
Anyways, what else? We've gone through some. What else excites you out of the block?
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you think about the green red planeswalkers? Because when we left the cast last time.
Sure.
Yeah, Motiki was like, I wasn't vocal enough on the cast, but you just, next week, the first thing you gotta do is be like, no, Zendikos is bad.
It's a $4 or $5 card, he thought. And I kinda heard where he was coming from, but then I looked at the card and I warmed up more to it. I think he's still a good card. But what do you say, Ray?
I wasn't vocal enough either. So I will actually stick my neck out and say I'll be really surprised if, cause everyone's like talking about playing him with Zendikos with Dahmer Raid, and I'm like, those are both powered by creatures. So adding more of them will make both worse. I think Zendikos is a win more. If you've been wrathed, he produces zero mana or a 2/2. I don't think that's all that great. Everyone is mentally spending all this mana, like, yeah, you can ramp into a dragon with all this mana. I'm like, well, if you have all these creatures, why are you bothering with the planeswalker? You're winning.
Eric really good because of the ability to beat Wraths by putting 2/2s into play?
He was very good because you could draw 7,000 cards.
I'm talking about Relentless. Like, was he not good against control decks because of the ability to make tokens return?
He was, because I hate playing against Garruk Relentless when I have my control deck.
Do you really think making the 2/2s is that good when they have 1/3s? I don't think it's that good. Like, I don't like them.
It's got haste. The haste is fucking just insane. I didn't know I had haste last time. Haste tokens are just going to put a pressure on you and consistent.
I mean, like I said, all right, go ahead, Ray. What do you think?
I think he's great. I mean, he's a 4-mana planeswalker, red-green. Red-green obviously wants him. I think he doesn't belong in the same deck as Domri.
Yeah.
I agree with the statement.
He's worse than Domri, though. Why wouldn't you just play Domri?
No, he's not.
Well, sure, but I mean, like, you can build around it. Like, for instance, Domri is good in, like, that Kibler deck, but this card might be better in the Kibler deck.
Or, like, Elves.
I just remember liking Voreska a lot more than anybody likes this guy, and Voreska never did dick because it didn't have a deck. And this doesn't have a deck because Domri's already in that deck.
You don't think you can run two of these in the Domri deck, and like it's good when it's good, and
then you have no removal because you've got all the planeswalkers. This is powered by creatures.
That's fair.
You can't be cutting creatures to jam it in the deck.
That's fair. I mean, I guess if you're playing red green, your removal is Gore Clan rampaging somebody when you attack, like.
Oh, and it's also, like, maybe Lightning Strike, but almost definitely, Mizzium Mortars.
Good thing we don't have to listen to you, and you're not the talent when it comes to grading cards. We got Ray here. He's our.
Okay. That's fine. What if I'm wrong and I was proved wrong by the guy who's got, like, fifth in the world this season with Planeswalker points? I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You'd feel silly.
Oh no, a guy who's better than me said something and I was wrong. I just don't think
Let's quote that. Can I get that like sent to my email, that part right there, so I can loop it for my ringtone?
No.
That'd be awesome.
What about this other planeswalker that we got that we didn't unveil last time?
Oh, Casual McCashcash.
It's bad.
I don't know about this one.
The blue black one?
Yeah, Ashiok Nightmare Weaver. Is that how you say Ashiok?
Maybe. Ashiok.
You don't like this card?
This is a one colorless.
Not everybody's Devere.
So it's a three color. It's a three casting cost planeswalker with three loyalties. It's +2. Can I finish this or is it okay?
Yeah, go ahead, Marcel.
Right on. Thank you. I appreciate it. So it's +2. It's X. You know, you get +2, Jason. you know.
You walked into that one.
Go on. I did. I every time.
Go on. Ignore him. Go on.
And,
That's how I feel too.
I'm sorry for interrupting earlier.
It's plus two. What you talking about? Everyone likes that. It's a baby making podcast. So I could just say that. I don't want to. It's plus two is exile the top three cards, the target's opponent library. It's negative X is put a creature card with converted mana cost X exiled with the Nightmare Weaver into the battlefield under your control. That creature type is a nightmare in addition to its other types. Negative 10 exile all cards from opponent's hands and graveyards.
That ultimate is real brutal. What was that card? The white black thing from like
Identity Crisis.
Identity Crisis. Yeah, like, it didn't seem that flashy to me, but I was playing it in Spanish Inquisition, and when you would resolve Identity Crisis, your opponent would just go, ugh.
So...
I was like, this doesn't affect the board, but, like, it's actually brutal getting your hand engraved.
It's one of those things, like, this is not a card. I don't even know if this card's main deckable, but this card will see play. This is huge.
For sure.
This is, like, this may actually be, I don't want to say better than Jace, because obviously Jace can win quicker.
Which Jace?
Mill Jace.
Okay.
Mill Jace. It may be better. Like, obviously Jace is better, but at the same time, like, you can cast this on turn four and still have a counter spell up with, like, the new 2/2 thing or whatnot. Like, just to, and it's so hard to kill. Like, it's plus two each turn?
Yeah.
So, like, it grows so quickly. Like, the negative 10 you can do on turn six, which in a control mirror match, that's devastating.
This is a planeswalker I'm excited about, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think that the competitive community will embrace this card. I think the competitive community is going to go like, well, fuck this card. And it's going to drop to like, maybe like $5. What if this were $5? Then you just scoop them.
Oh, yeah.
Because casual players like planeswalkers, and casual players like this kind of mill horse shit. So this is a casual planeswalker, like, through and through. And if it drops because the standard crowd leaves it alone, I think you pick them up when they're cheap, and then they will go back up. You know, on the basis of casual players, like, going, really hard at this. So, I'm actually excited, because I think there's real financial opportunity in a card like this. I think it's overpriced at its presale price, but it's definitely got some room to fall. I actually don't need to know its presale price to say that, as sad as that.
It's probably like 40 or 30. That's my guess. Not looking
unless it's $4.99, I feel safe saying that.
It's too much right now. That's interesting. I did not initially look at this card and I had the same response, like, oh, it doesn't impact the battlefield. But you know what? Against the, like, blue-white control decks or blue-black, whatever, the control decks, I mean, yeah, this is probably pretty important if you resolve it.
Yeah, here's
the 25 is the presale. Mm-hmm.
Three mana
planeswalkers are just pretty nasty as we have learned over time. So.
What's better? This guy? Tybalt.
Tybalt, clearly, he's way cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's way better. It's a whole turn earlier. You can be fucking yourself over by pitching cards.
I'll ask you about this one, too. Thassa, God of the Sea.
God of the Sea. Why would Corbin be asking about that?
Because I'm curious.
Hold on. Okay. Let's see. Have you guys already read this one before or no?
Yeah.
Well, it's a blue god. I mean,
yeah, Ray, it's kind of our job.
Jeez.
But read it for the players in case they don't know it and... has not been looking at the spoilers. And
I'm trying. It's a 3-mana, 5/5, indestructible. As long as your devotion to blue is less than 5, it's not a creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, scry 1. 1 in a blue target creature you control can't be blocked this turn.
Boom. And it turns into a 5/5, correct?
Correct.
I like it. I don't know how easy it's going to be to turn on the devotion in blue decks.
Right.
Like, obviously, the Merfolk, the Tide Mage from 14.
Tide Mage and this into Jace turns it on, but obviously that's, you know.
Tide Binder?
Yes.
Yeah, Tide Binder, that one.
I like
Tide Binder. This into Jace turns it on, but I mean that's like a pipe dream.
So listen to Planeswalker Asylum, they were really big on it just being an enchantment. They're like,
that's what I thought too, man. 3-mana scry 1 that it will take over later.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like being able to sculpt your draws, especially in the control mirror where you're like, okay, if I land here, I lose. If it's anything else, I win or have a better shot at winning. And you look and it's like, it's a land ship. Look again, alright, well, I lose, or I win, or whatever. I think that's very powerful, especially playing so many, control mirrors myself. That's pretty much what you'd be using it for. I would never want to turn on the devotion.
Make your Aetherling unblockable that you can already make unblockable? Like, what do you make it unblockable with this fucking
thing? Like, just, it doesn't matter, like, you get the free scry. And it has the ability to just randomly, like, you have a 1-3, you have this and a J. You play a Jace or whatever, like, you turn it on, or you get very close to turning it on, or whatever. Like, it's, I think at 3 mana, especially, like, in those control mirrors, it's fine, and it will help you throughout the game, and then it will just randomly turn into a 5-5 and kill somebody.
Ray, did you play a lot of Crystal Ball when you were running control? Like, exactly.
Man, it costs mana. That's, come on.
Oh,
that is
yeah.
True. That is true. I didn't want to invest. Well, okay, we talking limited? I played a lot of Crystal Ball limited.
Yeah, it's fine.
I play a lot of this card limited.
That's where scrying matters, because you have one good card in your deck and you're trying to find it. Scrying matters a lot in limited.
Yeah, well, Scry, you have one card you're trying to find in your blue deck. That's Jinx's Revelation. Closer to that every turn with this one.
I mean, and like you said, it's just, I mean, it will eventually turn on and randomly kill them, or it won't, but you'll have killed them because you scryed one every turn, like.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, in the control mirror, I think the person who lands this on turn 3 is going to be much farther ahead than the person who has, like, another removal spell in their hand that they don't need because you're playing control mirror, like.
Yeah, Scry 1 is so powerful, they're trying to jam these fucking dual lands down our throat and tell us, no, they're not gates, they're more powerful than gates, you know.
The other thing is, too, about the control mirror is that you have to understand that Detention Sphere is going to be a huge player.
It's the only card that matters, basically.
Yeah, so you gotta potentially put more things out there, because you can't D-Sphere or D-Sphere, so pretty much anything you play is just going to get D-Sphere, that's not a creature. Like, Omen Speaker, I'm not gonna D-Sphere that. Thassa, okay, that gets D-Sphered. Jace, okay, that gets D-Sphere. Nightmare Weaver, that gets D-Sphered. Like, in the mirror, that is.
Say two more. Two more.
Two more?
Yeah.
Mirror?
Etherling. Say two more things and then say that gets D-Sphered.
I've D-Sphered an Etherling before, so, you know, it's possible.
Wow.
Oh.
Don't worry, one of my buddies 4-for-1 me to kill my Etherling, and it won him the game, so I know how tough it is to kill that little guy.
Okay.
And, yeah, but pretty much, D-Sphere is going to be a huge player. I think that white card that exiles white permanent, is that what it does? Or does it destroy it?
Glare of Heresy, exile target white permanent.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty sweet in the mirror match too. Or like just mirror-esque with control decks, just because there's going to be a lot of things to exile, whether it be Elsbeth or D-Sphere or the White God. Like, good targets all around.
Yeah.
Good.
So what
that
do you,
might be an aggressive
deck. What do you think about the new Factor Fiction or not Factor Fiction?
I don't know how to judge that one. I love Factor Fiction, but I don't like that it's in blue and red. If it was just blue and that was ability in a rare, that would be sweet. But
well,
blue,
it's a new twist too. Like,
yeah.
I think the fact that you pick more expensive than the old Factor Fiction, and will even with competitive players playing as each other in top eights, you will see some of the most interesting piles.
Sure.
Because you have this mind game all of a sudden. It's like, it's not anymore like, hey, buy. You're seeing what your opponent doesn't want you to have, rather than your opponent seeing what you need to have.
That is true. That is interesting.
You can split a pile. Say, like, they have a bunch of creatures in play. You have a Wrath in your hand. You play this. You put a 4-1 pile putting the Wrath there. They give you the 4 pile. That's infinite value because you already had the Wrath. But then they have to, like, double-cross themselves. Like, all right, if they give you the Wrath, that means they have an answer to the Wrath, which is fine for you and me because now you have two of them most of the time. But at the same time, like, if they give you the other pile, it means they probably don't have an answer to that Wrath. Because most people aren't going to want to give you 4 cards if they have an answer to that one card.
I like cards that create a skill game.
I think it's actually one of the most skill-intensive cards that we've seen in a long time, and I can't wait to play it and watch my opponents fuck up.
It's pretty cool, but I think blue-red's going to be kind of rough position. Yeah. Like,
I mean, yes.
I'm operating under
this is not enough alone to make you just want to run that, but... There will be some deck that will utilize it.
I'm gonna play my Demon Heart Chimera, and then I don't care what happens. It's all good.
That card seems sweet, but man, does it, like, there's so many cards in this set that do look super, like, good or have a lot of flavor behind them. It's like, man, I really want to play with that. But then, like, when you start putting them in, like, your mind or putting them in the situations in real life, it's like, how good is this card, really? Like, that's one of the cards where it's like, man, this card could be insane. And then I start thinking, I'm like, well, it's pretty hard to turn this on, but maybe there's going to be some way to break the graveyard with Grizzly Salvage and just kidding. Is that rotating?
No.
Okay, I can't remember what set that was in.
All of a sudden you have a 4-color deck, so. Yeah.
Hey man, 4-color for the win. We got temples.
Yeah.
I'm looking for lands with my grizzlies.
So what's Steam Augury for the people that don't know and they don't have the internet or anything
Steam
else?
Steam Augury, 2-colorless, a red and a blue instant. Reveal the top 5 cards of your library and separate them into 2 piles. An opponent chooses one, put that pile in your hand, the other in your graveyard. So it's the reverse of fact or fiction. So a lot of people call it fiction or fact. I mean, I think it's probably worse than fact or fiction. And it doesn't mean it's not good, but I think it's worse than fact or fiction. And I think assuming decks are going to want to be two color in this format and not three color, blue red's a rough place to be.
Right. The thing is though, blue red control decks, control is one of the better suited places for, three colors because they can afford to play tap lands.
Right, exactly. I mean, but like, even then, I'm not sure that like you want to be blue red X instead of like blue white black, basically.
Sure.
I don't know though. I think, I mean, you're losing a lot of the removal.
You have to be, right?
I think it could be, like, American control could be pretty good now. Like, you still have cards like War Leader's Helix that give you reason to run red, things like that, right. But maybe playable.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. That seems way better than, like, Grixis. Because you pretty much have to have, Revelation.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to try and make a red-white control deck. That was, like, the first deck that I was thinking about in my head, and I threw around online with some of my buddies. And then it just got to the point, it's like, well, you could be all sweet with these cards. Because, like, when I seen Chain to the Rocks, and then I seen the White God, and when I seen Elspeth, and then I thought about War Leader's Helix and Ratchet Bomb, and I was like, man, I could just make a blue-red or a white-red control deck, and this is sweet. And I started thinking Assemble Legion and, like, the Red God, and, like, it just got too out of control, and I was like, well, this is probably a lot worse than blue-white. So,
I mean, I don't understand. I don't think you're going to be able to play control without playing blue-white unless there becomes a blue-black deck. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that it just seems impossible to get away from Sphinx's Revelation, the Tension Sphere.
Right. And you get Azorius Charm, and you just get so much already established control cards that are, like, a high demand and standard already, and that were in block for a reason. Even though Azorius Charm was debatable on how good it was in block because of Voice Resurgence, but new standard, I think it's going to be just as good as it was before.
Right. I mean, I think that... we've talked about Jace Architect of Thought on the cast for forever, including when it was like $7 or $8. It's now up to 15 on TCG Player. Where do you guys think it is 2 weeks after Theros comes out?
I'd guess 20.
I'm thinking 20 to 25.
Okay. He's crept up to 22 tickets on Moto, and he's been at 15 forever.
He was 13 forever, and I finally got sick of holding them. I was like, you know what? These are guaranteed $13 sales on TCG Player. So I blew out of them. But if I can still buy back in at around 15, I'm actually not that upset.
I
still don't think you buy at 15 to make 20 though. So if you got them, hold them, but like, yeah.
I think you buy at 12 or lower. I think you should have bought months ago when we talked about it and they were $8. I mean, so I hope you did that. If you didn't, I think great movement 15. I don't think I am surprised, but I think it'll go to 20 to 25 a couple weeks after Theros comes out and Blue, you know, takes on the first event or whatever.
Sure.
So let me ask you guys then, being the financial end, what is there any speculations you guys like to share with the cast and
let's go our listeners? Picks of the week, and this. Well, while you asked us, you had a really good one, so why don't you kickstart it off for us, and then we'll move into that.
My pick of the week is Imposing Sovereign. I've picked up a Buku number on Magic Online for dirt cheap. Started buying them at 0.15 tickets, and I quit when they got about 50 cents each, and I have a lot. And I think that's a good one going forward, because if it spikes even up to 2 or 3 tickets, I get to make a ton of profit, and I think it's going to be great in our white X aggressive decks moving forward.
Yeah, I'm very... a fan of that card, and I was looking at it when I was doing a lot of spec, and I just forgot to buy it, and I kind of...
What's the price on that card in person?
I don't know. I do Moto only myself.
I think they're like $1.
That seems like a perfect target too, because that could be an easy $5 to $7 card, especially after the Pro Tour when Craig Wesco like kills everyone with a white X deck.
Right.
Well, Craig Wesco killed everybody with white X on the Pro Tour, and
I lied. Wow, they're expensive. They're like $6.
They're six? No, they're not. I just sold one for like $3 on TCG Player.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is like I just sold one for two something like a week ago. So I guess, have they been climbing them recently? Cause I missed that one. Yeah, they're $6 on,
Star City.
I listed one last night and sold one last night. So the low on TCG Player is still like $2.50. So you can still get them for like $2.50.
Okay, so the market hasn't caught up with the spec, or like the projected value.
Unless like one guy bought everybody out last night.
You're talking...
Yeah, 261 on TCG Player.
They're on buy list for 2 to $2 to $2.50.
Here's a guy with 20 of them for $2.79 free shipping. So should I buy 20 of them for $2.79?
I mean, that seems fine. I did all my buying for the week already. I was bad.
Okay. Add to cart. Like, this is happening.
I did a lot of bad things this week when I came to mind.
I'm going to spend $55 on opposing sovereigns because Ray said to. Let's do this.
I remember picking imposing sovereign back when we did our M14 set review.
Yeah, Corbin, you're really smart. We should all listen to you from now on.
That was what I was going for, yeah. Anyways, who wants to go next?
Imposing sovereign. I've got 20 of them now.
That's Jason's douchebag.
So definitely, I mean, Ray talked about this, but attention right. sphere.
Ooh, that card.
They're $1.30 on Moto. They spiked up. They used to be 50 cents or 40 cents, but yep. You know, $1.30 is still not bad. I mean, this card could easily be $3 or $4. We're seeing Mizzium Mortars now is at $4.25. So you're going to start seeing premium removal and premium cards from Return to Ravnica start to spike up into these price range. So this is definitely one of those top cards along with probably Supreme Verdict. Where Supreme Verdict is almost $3 now, so, you know, you're gonna see these cards go up, you know, Abrupt Decays along with that. And I thought Dead Boar, but now because of the new card, Hero's Downfall, Dead Boar may not be in that class, but, you know, so, get those cards, the Ravnica Rares are gonna just go up, because they're gonna be played, and when we get the new Mini Gods, and the Mini Gods are gonna be all dual colored in the later blocks. Yeah, you're gonna start seeing a bigger interest in these double color cards.
Yeah. Hopefully the mana facing gets better. Hopefully they're not temples.
They're gonna do temples one more and then maybe hopefully, I think possibly for the last set they're just gonna split it open and be like, you're gonna have Ravnica and you're gonna have three color just goodness for this last, you know, few months. So, I got my fingers crossed.
Some Arcane Sanctum type at
something. Because they're doing the duels. They said that the duels are there to constrict decks. And to punish people for playing three color decks in essence. And you're doing it right against a Ravnica, which is a three color set. Or what I'd hope to be a three color set. So if it's going to be 6 months of it being two colors and then all of a sudden they open it up and at the end it's all three color madness, then I won't be upset. But if it is just going to be two colors and that's how it's going to be for the duration, I won't be a happy camper, but just me.
Okay.
So, who wants to go next?
I do.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jason.
What's yours, Ryan? There's no way you're stealing mine, so go ahead.
You don't think so? Alright.
I think there is no way. Should we bet? Let's actually do a bet.
I don't want to do a bet, because I think that my odds
are... not Fogo, Turkeyville. I bet you...
That's awful.
Loser buys Turkeyville.
I have to guess one game in the... Or one card in the whole game of Magic to be correct. That sounds awful. No.
Only 12,000 of them.
Okay, let the record reflect that Ryan is a coward.
How about this? We will reflect the odds. If
12,000 to 1.
I will buy you a half a burger from Turkeyville. And if I win, you have to buy me Turkeyville for the rest of my life.
6,000 Turkeyvilles.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Turkeyville for life. Got it. I agree to your terms.
Yeah, my pick of the week is Mutavault. I think
what?
A lot of potential. I don't know what
that. Are you shitting me? That was my card. I just typed it in.
No, you didn't, Jason. That's some alternate universe where you didn't figure it out ahead of time.
What? Happened. Now I'm gonna play him Turkeyville forever.
I want to cash them all in next week. We have Turkeyville party.
I'm invited. I invite myself.
That's it. Ray, you and me, 6,000 Turkeyvilles.
We can do it.
This happen.
One GP, 6,000 turkeys.
One man, one robot turkey from the future. In a world devoid of non-turkey food, one man.
Overlooking the beautiful skyline of Canada.
One man is trying to get his pick of the week out there.
But anyway, no, my pick is definitely Chandra. She's really low. I mean, she's like $6. I don't know. Is she seeing much block play?
Dude, like, no, but she is insane. I've been crushing people with her.
Did everybody watch Ruben Bresler just pull pants down in Legacy with Chandra?
Yeah. She's seeing Legacy play too. So, like, why is this a $10 Planeswalker still?
Because it was in one Legacy deck, and that Legacy...
Yeah, but that's fine. But it's, like, in the mono-red deck that's doing really well online, yes. Too.
I've played the Mirror Match infinite number of times in dailies and eight-mans. And that card, I will admit, the first time that I, like, seen Chandra Pyromancer and we were talking about it for the spoilers, I thought it was good. I thought it was all right. I didn't know what deck it was. No, it fits in almost every red deck.
Yeah, I like the card a lot.
That card
Thank
is insane.
You. Victory.
The first time I cast it was when I played red-green, when Kibler said to play it in the sideboard of his red-green deck. at a, like, 1K or something in Columbus. And I killed my opponent because he had Restoration Angel he flashed in, the turn before, and I was like, +1, 1 to you, can block. And, like, that's when I realized, I was like, oh, it can block. That's sweet, too. And I just killed him. And then, in, like, in standard right now, I don't know how relevant it's going to be going forward, but in the current standard format, which, obviously, like I said, I'm Moto Grinder right now, so bear with me. There are so many X1 creatures that are creatures that want to block. Like, pinging a Boros Reckoner so that he doesn't just annihilate your team seems sweet. Killing anything that's a Doom Traveler, Lingering Souls, Blood Artist, in the Mirror Match, Fire Fist Strikers. Like, the list goes on and on. Like,
imposing sovereigns.
Attacking to a 4-4 with a 2-2 and then slamming this and, like, pinging it and then pinging it again or a 3-3. Like, there's just so many things you can do with it. I've killed Gorklan Rampages with this and a spear. Like, the card is sweet. And then, like, when you start getting value off it, when you get so far ahead and you can just start zeroing against control to, like, draw two cards while they draw, like, hopefully air, or if they Revelation, it gives you something to get back into. And I've actually ultimated this 4 times. And the first time, it was so filthy. They were at 3 life and I Searing Spirit 3 times. Like, for the O kill. Oh, it was insane.
So it was a win more.
No, the thing was, is that, like, it killed them then versus me having to, like, hopefully I don't break or play a creature and they have a way to deal with it. Like, the Searing Spirit in the stack of 10 was 4 cards down and there was 2 lands on top and then a creature. So had that been, like, just a +1 and, like, I can ping them, I guess, for 3 turns in a row and hopefully they didn't do anything. But, like, it was, like, kill you now. It was a win more to the point where, like, I don't need the extra copies. But it was a win now card where, like, if I was able to give them another turn, maybe they ripped that Thraktus because I was playing against Junkrites. And they were just like, oh, get you, or Restoration Angel, Blink Thraktus. Now I'm at 15 or 12 or 13 or whatever. Yeah, 13. And they're like, deal with this now. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet.
I just want the record to reflect that Ryan asked if the M14 Chandra was played heavily in block.
M14 block.
M14 block, man. That's a real thing.
That's some funny shit. Let me bask in that, because that is some funny shit.
I couldn't wait any longer, though.
Ryan, put in this mouth.
We went back to it. It's still good.
That's fine. But no, like, I feel like Chandra just, it's really well positioned, because like you said, I think it fits into a number of red decks. It just fills different roles. Like, if you're in a control deck, you might not be using the +1 so much as just, like, drawing an extra card with it.
Sure.
Like, I can see that. That, with the new factor fiction, gives me a good reason to want to be blue-red X.
See, I've always liked Chandra, so I could just bask in that, right?
Yeah. Chandra's sweet. I picked up my set after playing her, and I was quite happy. Don't look back.
Chandra Ralzeric. Ooh, yeah, baby. Let's play some blue-red. Blue-red control or something.
Take all the turns.
Oh, dismissing the dream. Oh, I did that. I did that in the deck, actually. Because Ralzeric did take out 2 creatures at a time with dismissing the dream. It's pretty nasty.
Was that a block deck?
No. It was actual standard deck. I played it on Scotty Mac's stream one time.
That's sweet.
It was actually
fun. Who wants to go next?
Has everyone gone but me?
I have not either.
Oh. Well, go ahead. If you still mind, you can get Infinite Turkey Bill, too.
I choose, there's a lot of writing on this. I'm actually going to go with Tristani.
Tristani is high, isn't it?
It's gone high now, but it's seen a lot of block play. And I don't think, just like the price of Jace didn't go up, reflecting how much play it saw on block, it's just now going up. Tristani's kind of in the same boat in that it sees a bunch of block play, but the paper price hasn't climbed. Like, it had its correction because, you know, it was $4 for a while, and then this summer it went up to $7. You know, right now it's sitting like $6.50. I mean, it's been stagnant for the last 3 or 4 months, but it's seen a fair amount of block play. And this card really does, poops all over the aggro decks. Like, so, and if we're talking about green white.
You guys both literally giggled at the word poop.
This is...
like came out of nowhere with it.
Well, came from Corbin.
I was trying to decide if I wanted to say shits, and then I decided I'd keep it PG-13. But
actually, poops all over was actually funnier than shits all over. This was one of those rare instances.
I was just trying not to curse. Anyways, it's
you fucked up.
It's been seeing a bunch of block play, and like we obviously know how powerful Voice of Resurgence is, and all of that. So like there's like a black, red, white control-ish deck that's been doing okay in block. That I also thought about going with because it's got some interesting cards like Assemble the Legion and Merciless Eviction that have been doing well, but like I think Tristani's probably a better call just because it's mythic.
I like Tristani's. We've always been a fan of Tristani. We love this card ever since it came out and has been undervalued ever since.
If you go back, we told you to buy them when they were cheap.
Yeah, when they were like $3, $2.50.
We talked about this card at $3.
We said that was not correct, and we were correct.
And online right now, they're $6.50, and you know, they're kind of high, but again, this is a card that could, it's a mythic that could break that $10 barrier easily, especially post-rotation.
If Jace is 20 to 25, Tristani could certainly hit 10, so.
Yeah, so it's not out of the dark. I don't know if it's possible it could double, but I don't know if it's for sure. I think you should have got in a lot sooner and then you would have been a lot happier having some right now. And then it hit in 10, but right now.
That's not a very good pick of the week. I probably should have listened to us a while ago, dumbasses.
No. We gotta bask him when we were right sometimes, cause well, we've been wrong.
I think it's fine at 650. Like, yeah, got in at 3, more power to you. Great job. It doubled. Like, but I think it's 650 right now. You can pick it up at that and trade, and it could realistically go to like 10 to 15.
The card's so goddamn good. Like, have you played against this card? It's actually miserable to play against. Agreed. You never feel like you're in the game.
Yep. I remember being the first one with that tech way back in States last year.
I remember playing this card.
Don't say it.
Routinely went to 100 life with that Seance deck, but it's bad.
No, I know, but like, I was utilizing it just because it gained so much, like even just with Thragtusk, like, you didn't need to be cute with it. The card was just plain good. Like, Thragtusk, my Thragtusk dies, I make copies of the token every turn. Like, worst thing I'm doing in my mid-rangey deck at that point is making a 3-3 and gaining 3 life every turn. Like, playing a Centaur Healer every turn guarantees not terrible.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of that card, what do you guys think about Avin of the Worm going forward?
Hey, Ray Perez. You mind if I do my pick of the week, or?
I'm sorry. I thought you already went over it.
It's fine. You've taken control of the podcast. That's good. We like to encourage our guests to totally restructure what we're doing and kind of do their own thing and kind of take charge. So.
Shut up and give us your pick of the week.
Oh, you know what my pick of the week is. Ryan said it's Mutavault. Here's my rationale. You have two classes of rares and mythics in the core set. You have the stuff that is not reprinted and is underpriced, if you ask me. And you have the stuff that is not reprinted and is overpriced. So you have the stuff like Colonian Hydra, the Angel. I think that stuff's all overpriced. I think Mutavault is down because everyone's like, well, I'm busting all these M14 packs. People are going to stop busting M14 packs immediately. Are you going to draft M14 when Theros is out? No, you're not. So we're pretty much done opening Corset. It's just going to sit on shelves, and everyone's like, hey, we're pricing out F&M and Corset, and everyone's going to go, boo! And they're like, okay, we won't do that. So Corset's not going to get opened, except by, like, people buying packs at Walmart. So what you have is you have Mutavault that I think is down artificially, and I think Scavenging Ooze, I will say along with that, I think Scavenging Ooze is down artificially. Okay. Mutavault's card that we've shown historically can get to, like, $40 goddamn dollars or something ridiculous like that. And I don't think the reprint is enough to bring it down because sure they printed a lot, but it's not going to all get open. It's just going to sit on shelves. So I really think that Mutavault is actually experiencing an artificial lull. It will pick back up as soon as people stop opening M14 and people realize they're not as abundant as they thought. I think you buy in at the current like 15 or whatever the hell it is. Cause I think it's back up to 25. Like that sounds like a crazy proclamation for a card that you tank so hard on the reprinting, but I really think, like, we're done seeing the artificial depression caused by the reprinting. And there's not as much in the market.
It'll drop a year from now when it's getting ready to rotate out of Standard?
Oh, Standard, it doesn't matter in Standard. Who's playing Mutavault in Standard? This is a Legacy card.
Mono Red.
Yeah, but there's not even that much Legacy that plays it right now, like.
It's played in Modern, sure. Like, it is an Eternal card. It's played in Modern.
It's Eternal, but it's not like, it is a staple, I suppose. But it's not something like you're showing up before of top 8ing every weekend list, like Honor and stuff. Like, it's a good card, but I don't think it's enough to be reprinted to hold 25.
Thoughtseize just shows up four of top 8s every week list. Like, what are you even talking about?
Right, Thoughtseize, I agree. Like, so, will be worth a bunch of money. You're talking about Mutavault right now, though, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about there's no card that, like, meets those ridiculous criteria.
Thoughtseize, like, that card will remain, like, that card is a staple. That card sees tons of play. Like, it sees way more play than Mutavault does.
I mean, that is true. I think.
I mean, granted, Thoughtseize's price will be hurt more. I do agree in the fact that M14 is going to be opened a lot less than, you know, say, Theros will be.
You don't think the price is going to go up from where it is now?
I think it eventually will, but I don't think it's worth picking them up now.
I think
all these stores are going to still have M14 sitting on their shelves, therefore meaning that you were just saying, like, they can't give the product away, which means once the price does go up, if it goes up at all, it'll just readjust itself because suddenly M14 will be worth a little more.
No, but who's redeeming M14 on Moto also? Like, nobody.
I'm sure plenty of people are. There's enough cards in M14 to make the set worth something.
Okay, here's my take. I think probably a better comparison than Thoughtseize, maybe Liliana, right? I mean, because I think we can agree that Liliana at this point is more of an eternal card than standard. Looking at MTG stocks, Liliana saw the spike to like $45, $46, okay? And it's no worse in Modern or Legacy now than it was in May when it hit that price point. But it's down like $5 since then. So, like, I think if you make the same argument for Mutavault, there's something to be said for Mutavault dipping at rotation, even though, like, we know that it's true. Like, Fetchlands dipped at rotation just a little bit. Like, they certainly didn't get more expensive. So, like, that's the only... The reason for that is
you get a lot of people who, like, I guess what I just call them is, like, F&M grinders. And these are the guys who don't care about any of the older formats. So no matter what, once their cards get ready to rotate, they just sell them. Like, they don't look at, oh, these will be good in Modern, these will be good in Legacy. And you have enough of those people that dump into the market that it does make the price go down, at least temporarily, and then it readjusts itself. And yeah, I mean, like, it's going to happen with almost anything. Like, it has to be very, very playable outside of...
I don't dislike that. It's just hard for me to, like, reconcile. If Liliana is cheaper at rotation, just because of rotation, it's hard to believe that Mutavault won't follow the same course. Like, at $15, though?
But rotation isn't approaching for Mutavault anytime soon.
Right, so you think then that it'll go up before then, and you get rid of them before then? Is that your...
It's gonna get played, like, yeah, I think it's gonna, I think it'll probably spike in the short term just based on its playability.
I think that's true.
Oh, I didn't read that.
I think that that's true, for sure. Especially, like, if decks do move to color, you can squeeze some Mutavaults in, for sure.
I mean, I wouldn't have said that if I didn't think that, because I definitely wouldn't advocate buying them now and then sitting on them for a year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with it.
If they'll be the same price a year from now, I don't think that they will be.
I mean, I can see argument for it, but I think it also is going to very much depend on how good it is in the new standard, because, I mean...
That's okay, Ryan. You think F&M Grinder is a thing, and you say it every week on the podcast.
Well, I agree with you, Jason. I know a Moto is $6.50 for the two cars,
averaging
Ooze and Mutavault, and they're not going to get any cheaper, and they're internal playable.
I will say this about the F&M Grinder thing. Like, I think the better term is casual player.
No, it's not, though. It's like...
No, they're not really...
Your local stores who are very competitive, and they play Tier 1 decks. They're not casual players, but they don't go, like... They're the kind of guys that may go to a GP if it's within an hour or two.
Yeah,
but that's,
I understand what you're
saying. I love to give Ryan shit, but there were actually, like, guys at my old shop that had a secret Facebook group that they wouldn't allow anybody to join, and they would, like, come up with all this tech so they could win F&M and get booster boxes for cheap with their shirt.
I mean,
like, as much as I'm giving Ryan shit, that's an actual phenomenon.
It is. I guess, in my mind, anyone who doesn't play at a PTQ or higher level, I consider somewhat casual. But yeah,
well, that's because you've got pro points, Corbin. We can all have pro points.
Shut up. There's definitely
one for one at the Invitational.
There's a level between PTQ, GP grinder, and casual kitchen table player. So yeah, I mean, I agree. That's a real thing.
Yeah, they're still not Timmy though. I don't know where you got that one.
All right.
This is why we aren't friends outside the cast.
Yeah, we really hate each other. Okay, so Ray, how can they reach you? And when are you going to have an article up? Because
Ray, when are you going to get me an article?
All right, well, you can reach me at RayFuturePro on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle. And actually, I have a person from Moto who follows me who's not my biggest fan because he just talks so much shit on Moto. Based, if you listen to this, Based, I'm talking to you. BASED. I'm looking for you. Anyways,
Ray, this is how West Coast rappers get shot. You might want to tone it down.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't mean in an aggressive way. I mean, let me battle you in person in a LARP field. But yep. So that's how you can get me on Twitter. And I should be writing an article after the GP, talking about the GP, and then hopefully, if my schedule permits it, doing an article at least once a week or once every other week. That's what my main goal is, but I might aim for once every other week because It's really hard to think of stuff to talk about that's not repetitive.
Three of us write a weekly column and have no sympathy for you.
Yes. The thing is like, if I play Mono Red for 3 weeks, like, do you want me to write 3 Mono Red articles? Cause that's all I really know right now. Like, that's where I think I might have to go for every other week so that I can just, like, force myself to switch up and have different, or whatever. But I can also write a mini series on preparing for the Pro Tour for someone that's never been to a Pro Tour before, as well as for people who don't really have an inside look at the Pro Tour. Cause, for instance, I have stories from the Pro Tour from, like, my friends and whatever. But I've never been there, and I read an article from Miguel, I forgot his last name, but he wrote an article on MTG Madness about, like, the secret life of a Pro Tour player, and he was talking about all these different things and mentioned a couple pros, and as I read that, I was like, oh yeah, I agree with that, I never knew that, or I didn't know that, or I did, and so on and so forth, so I think that's pretty sweet too, like, if I was able to complete the mini-series with, like, well, after my Pro Tour, this is what I think of this person, or this is what this person showed me, and so on and so forth. I think that'd be pretty sweet for, like, everyone out there who's just, like, thinking about the Pro Tour but never really, like, won a PTQ or never had, like, the ambition to go to a PTQ or maybe just reads the coverage. Because I was a long-time follower for 13 years of, like, sideboard.com and coverage. So this is sweet that I actually get to live it now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm sure people will be, you know, like, a behind-the-scenes look from somebody going to the Pro Tour would be, like, really interesting and goes beyond kind of just, this is the deck I played and this is how I did type of article.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm going to go from the ground up and I'm not in, like, an LSV play group where I have, like, 10,000 pros at my beck and call who I can bounce ideas off. And it's like, I'm like, what was the guy who top eight at the last Pro Tour from who's a judge?
Oh, yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. How,
I actually saw his name today. I don't even remember. Rob Castellan. Rob Castellan.
A perfect example because, I do believe he said that he did playtesting the whole time for the Pro Tour with his brother in his garage. Like, that'd been an awesome story to read. Like, if he never wrote an article, that'd be sweet. So that's kind of like the similar, like, idea to mine where, like, I'm going to be at, like, the card shop with my local guys and, like, my guys from Grand Rapids and other places that I can bounce ideas.
You should test in a garage.
You luckily at least have a couple more people though that like have at least.
Oh, sure. Like,
I mean, there's some local guys, plus your Grand Rapids guys. Like, there's people who've been on the tour, so it's not like you're going completely blind. But yeah.
Well, yeah, like there's people that have been to like one or two Pro Tours before, but like they're not like the mainstays.
Sure.
I had access to in the beginning. So, but knowing this too, I also for anyone out there who thinks about the Pro Tour, it is very important to go a week in advance, whether it's just a sightsee or not. A lot of people get houses for a week in advance, and that's where I messed up because I'm flying out or Tuesday afternoon, getting there Wednesday morning, and the whole reason my plans fell through with my testing group originally was because they wanted me to be there the Monday of. And everyone I talked to was like, of course, I'm going to be there from like Monday to Monday or Monday to Wednesday or whatever. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. So anyone who has aspirations, make sure you have at least a week and a half or a week off. Because that, obviously, I found out, is a very important thing.
Right, for sure. Okay.
It sounds interesting. I can't wait to read this good stuff. But,
hey, so guys, make sure to check out brainstormfree.com for more content.
Yeah, I'm working on the GP Oakland video. We got with Kevy Metal, shout out to Kevy Metal, Barstool Saints, and everyone else that was out there for that one.
So something else. If you didn't get a Brainstorm Brewery playmat and you wanted one, we are getting 30 more printed. We are putting these in very small batches to keep the excitement up. So look for details on our website about how you can get the second wave of 30 of these playmats.
Because
they will go fast.
Yep.
Also, if you like fantasy football, check out nerdballmagazine.com.
So, okay, does that website teach you about fantasy football or what? Because I'm interested in that. And I don't know a lot about sports.
Wow, I expected to get trolled right here. Okay.
No, the time to get into fantasy football is like right after the draft. That's the best time.
the website, there's a variety of stuff. Some of it will teach you the basic concepts of fantasy football, which is me. Like this is my first year doing it. So like I'm just writing every week about my experiences and learning how it goes. But there's people on there who've been doing it a long time who, are teaching you how to do it, like kind of the strategies behind it. And then there's people who just give you, if you're involved in it or whatever, do rankings and things like that. So it's helpful both to learn about fantasy football or if you're involved in fantasy football already, just to keep up to date. So it's nerdballmagazine.com.
I've checked that out.
You're not going to check it out, Ray.
No, I seen a tweet earlier about it. That's why I was like, interesting. So,
Ray, you're just being polite.
No.
It's perfectly fine. Corbin won't be upset that you have no intention of checking out his website at all.
But it wants to. I started it. It's an awesome website.
It's getting a ton of traffic. Website is taking on a mind of its own. It's a juggernaut!
It's unfortunate because it just proves it.
It's fantasy football. It's like a big deal.
It's fantasy like a big deal.
Fantasy football probably has more players than that.
Fortunately, that's true.
I don't know. Maybe fantasy soccer.
Fantasy hockey.
Oh my god, fantasy soccer. First pick, Landon Donovan. One goal, one assist. USA beats Mexico 2-0.
He's on fire.
Okay, hold up. Let's stop. This is the end of the cast. Tune in next week.
Oh, come on. You can talk about fantasy football, but I can't talk about World Cup caliber soccer. That's some exciting shit.
I can't even name soccer players.
The U.S. is not supposed to beat Mexico, man. That's not supposed to happen.
Something minutes of sports ball, whoop-de-whoop.
Oh, but we can talk about beer the whole time? I don't even like sports, and I'm excited about U.S. beating Mexico.
Is that a big deal? Please tell me if I should
care.
Yeah,
it's a big deal. I like Mexico beating the United States at football.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Whatever. I don't like soccer. Soccer's the worst.
Oh, it's the worst? Why? Because they don't stand around for 5 minutes before they make every play like they do in the NFL?
I refereed soccer at a competitive level for like 8 years and I still didn't like the game.
Hey, we've been getting complaints. We've been going past an hour, so we're going to have to end this cast because, you know, you guys are not contributing positive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's bullshit and you know it, Marcel.
No. we had a cease and desist letter we got written from upper management. Good night.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Peace.
Yep. Have a good night, y'all.
Goodbye.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Alright, my card is Chandra Pyromancer.
That was not my card.
Yeah, that was so stupid. Jason had to put his on the record.
I actually typed it in the chat box.
Yep, that's fine. Shows you.
As you're typing?
You're typing it in there. Yeah. Alright, Marcel, we need to erase the last 30 seconds. My picture is beautiful.